Hey folks, it is Wednesday night, the 1st of March 2017, and you're listening to episode 57 of the AIH Superfans podcast. I'm one of your superfan pals. My name is Alan on Twitter. You can find me at Slip with Five Eyes or Slip.
Yo, it's Poppy at Big Poppy Peg City.
I'm Brian. You can find me on Twitter.com at Brian from AIH.
Special guest, who are you?
Hi, I'm Chris Mackling at CMAC Live on the Twitter machine.
All right, so CMAC making his debut with us superfans. And as of today, or at least recording right now, the only person I believe on this podcast who is actually in Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. That's true, yeah.
So there you go. Pappy's in Calgary. I'm, of course, in Toronto. And Brian, you're in some mystery location in Ohio still?
Yeah.
Yeah, figured. You're still not in Canada yet?
Not yet. I haven't been deported yet.
All right.
He's in a red state. Red state.
He is in a red state. Good for you, man. Oh, so what do we want to talk about today? Anything happen? Actually, not much, right? I think that's the problem. So we are at the end of trade deadline day in the NHL, and we can go through and talk about other trades that have happened. But of course, being a Winnipeg Jets podcast, why don't we start there? headed into the day, I don't think that there was a lot of anticipation about anything really with the Jets. Nothing out there that we thought they'd be buying. And a couple of assets, underwhelming assets that may have been sold, most notably Stafford, Pavlik, and Thorburn, who are coming up to unrestricted free agency. Pavlik's already been cleared waivers once. No one took him for free, but now that they don't have to absorb a year's worth of salary, maybe he could have been something. I don't know if there was a market for Thorburn. Stafford ended up going at the very end of the day for a conditional sixth round to the Boston Bruins. What do we think, guys?
It was something. It's something more than I expected when it was 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock there.
I want to know who the other teams were that were reportedly interested in Stafford.
I heard Chicago was. There was a tweet earlier in the day that said Chicago is interested in one of Stafford or Lowry, but they didn't have an actual name yet.
It was, I mean, who knows, right? It seems like the market started off hot and then kind of got cold fast, right? Like guys were going for not too much near the end of the day today, right?
Well, just like the previous years, the bigger stuff happened before the deadline, actually, right? Like over the weeks or days leading up to the deadline, anything with any substantial meat anyways, right?
Well, do you want to talk about the things that happened other than this thing? Where's the trade tracker? Here we go. Let's look at what happened across the NHL on leading up to the trade deadline. I'm going to the TSN trade tracker. So I won't read absolutely everything, but what have we got to note? So from today, we have Curtis Lazar going and I guess Michael Kostka going to Calgary for Jyrki Joupala and a second round pick in this year's draft. I think that may have been the highest draft pick that got swapped today, right?
Yep.
P.A. Parenteau from New Jersey to Nashville for a sixth round pick. Mark Strait got traded twice. His final landing spot was Pittsburgh for a fourth round pick. What else do we have on here? Ginla got moved, right?
For a fourth.
For a fourth round, a conditional fourth round pick. He went to L.A.
They were saying that that's actually, I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, there's no trade. They just gave them away, really, right? That's the condition on that one, if they don't make the playoffs.
All right.
and they ate half his remaining salary, too, right? Colorado.
I think so, yeah.
The Red Wings
basically gave him away.
The Red Wings traded Thomas Vanek to Florida for Dylan McClarth. And McElrath, is that how you say it?
McElrath, I think. Yeah.
And a conditional.
Yeah, he's from Winnipeg too, apparently.
Well, there you go. A conditional third round pick coming back as well. Somewhere down here, I'm trying to see. Oh, no, he was claimed off waivers. Speaking of Winnipeg boys, the Leafs picked up Eric Fair. So good
that
for
that. That wasn't
them.
A trade?
No,
I thought that was a trade.
Was it a trade?
I thought it was a trade too. Yeah.
I think it was.
Is it on the trade list?
I'm looking.
Oh, no, never mind. Here it is. Here it is. Didn't he clear waivers eventually or initially? Toronto Maple Leafs.
There was all sorts of weird stuff with that today. They were reporting that he might have got claimed, and then they said, yeah, he cleared waivers. And then 3 hours later, he was traded. So nobody was quite sure, but it sounds like he was traded. Was it for a fourth? Is that what?
Maple Leafs trade Frank Corrado to the Pittsburgh Penguins for Eric Fair, Steve Oleski, and a fourth round pick. Right.
And he's not really a Winnipeg boy. He's a Winkler boy, by the way.
Yeah, it's all the same. what else did we have today of any note? I'm trying to see.
Montreal did some stuff.
Well, they traded for Steve Ott last night.
Andreas Martinsson.
Where is...
King.
here we go. Andreas Martinsson. Yeah.
Sven Andrighetto.
Yeah, for Andreas Martinsson. So go Habs, go. And not seeing much else. I think let's see. The most notable picks leading up to the trade deadline were what? I know that former Winnipeg Jet Johnny Oduya got traded to the Blackhawks.
Yep.
For Mark McNeil and a conditional fourth round pick that Dallas is getting back. Victor Stahlberg yeah. ended up going from Carolina to Ottawa for a third round pick.
Shattenkirk was one of the bigger deals.
Shattenkirk and Phoenix Copley went to Washington for a 2007 first round pick, and then like the world's most complicated formula of conditional picks, as well as Zach Sanford and Brad Malone. Does anyone know how to break down the conditional picks?
No.
On that one, no.
I think it's something like if they make the third round and he plays 50% of the games, it's one thing, and otherwise it's another. Defenseman Brandon Smith went from Detroit to New York Rangers for a third round pick in 2017 and a second round pick in 2018. The Senators traded for Alexander Burroughs, traded Jonathan Dallin for him. I think people in Ottawa were scratching their heads on that one. Jordy Benn goes from Dallas to Montreal for Greg Patarin and a fourth round pick in 2017. Toronto Maple Leafs were buyers. They bought Brian Boyle. He was traded for Byron Froese and a conditional second round pick in 2017. Martin Hanzel got traded from Arizona, him and Ryan White. And a fourth round pick in 2017 went to Minnesota. For Grayson Downing, a first-round pick in 2017, a second-round pick in 2018, and a conditional pick in 2019. People kind of saying that that's Minnesota signaling that they are all in on their playoff run this year.
As they should be.
And Ben Bishop went from Tampa Bay, along with a fifth-round pick in 2017, to L.A. for former Winnipeg Jet Peter Budaj. Defenseman Eric Cernak, seventh round pick and a conditional pick in 2017 draft, and that doesn't say which one. There was some stuff before that as well. Another former Winnipeg Jet, Ron Hainsey, went from Carolina to Pittsburgh for Danny Christo and a second round pick in 2017. This would be, again, a guy who Chevy let walk for nothing.
He is of no value. We are making a playoff run.
And he must be terrible if Pittsburgh wants him for the playoffs, right? Yeah, a team that's contending for the cup, he must be awful.
Terrible defenseman.
So, I mean, I think those kind of cover the big ones for the trade deadline. So what did we learn here? We learned that Washington's kind of the one that's loaded up in the East, and Minnesota's the one that's loaded up in the West, right?
You have to kind of include that Nesterov deal too, eh?
Where is that one on my list?
Montreal.
Oh, sorry, I'm doing a find to find. So you're
talking... Montreal also got, is it Davidson from Edmonton, the defenseman?
Yeah.
They did a whole bunch of things that really didn't accomplish what they needed to do.
Here we go. They traded David Dernay for Brandon Davidson.
That was the only like good move they made.
And then didn't to change teams there, but didn't like Yannick Hansen trade seems to be the most hockey trade of everything to San Jose.
Yes.
I'm trying to find that one too. Where is that one?
He was traded for that that prospect. I can't remember his name. He was a point of game player in the NHL.
And what was that today that was tweeted out that Hansen put Winnipeg on his trade list?
On his trade list or his no trade list? Here we go.
No, his trade list.
Really?
His list of, yeah, his list of places that he'd like to go. That's what I did. So, I see that wrong?
Well,
no, that's correct. Yeah, that's correct. That was said today. He had an eight team trade approval list, and one of the eight teams is Winnipeg. I guess his wife's from here, apparently, and he has a house here.
Former
that's
Manitoba why. Moose, right? So former
that's
Manitoba
right. Yeah.
Moose. All right. So yeah, he went to San Jose for Nikolai Goldobin and a conditional fourth round pick. So Vancouver did some stuff. Montreal did quite a few things. Toronto was busy. Edmonton made a trade. Calgary make a trade.
Yeah, they made
Curtis Lazar.
Yes, that's right. So they made the Lazar trade. So they were busy. So all the Canadian teams were very busy, and then the Jets snuck in at the very end.
That's as busy. That's really. This is like hectic. This is like totally off the wall bonkers for Jets Lab.
So
his activity today.
So
first deadline day trade since 2012.
When he traded Oduya?
Oduya was the first year. Year one.
Yeah, but they traded in the playoff year when they got Stepniak and Tlusti though on deadline day.
Leading up to the deadline.
Yeah,
sure. Really on deadline day. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the year that Chevy was actually doing things.
I think I read that they've had three trade deadline trades in 6 years is what I saw today. Like as far as
unloading UFAs.
Yeah.
So okay. Lads included in that, right? So
sure.
Ladd and Stafford, who arguably should never have been a UFA on this team, but that's for another day.
So Chevy traded, this was the first trade that Chevy made involving players since the Andrew Ladd trade last year. So it's been just over a year since he made a trade involving players, I believe. So that's great. And the only other trade in between, I think there were two of them. One was the Logan Stanley trade, and the other one was when they dumped off their seventh round pick to Montreal for this year. For Montreal, seventh round pick in this coming draft. Which will be a worse pick. Because the Jets were picking sixth in the seventh round, and Montreal this year will be picking deeper than that. But, you know, whatever. Seventh round pick.
Given their track record with seventh round picks, that's really going to mess things up.
So, I mean, are we disappointed? Are we not surprised? Like, what was the expectation going into today, really, with the Jets?
Not much
at all.
I mean, the problem
would have been if he didn't get rid of Stafford.
Yep.
Like, I mean, it's expected that you're going to get rid of this guy, especially when, you know, Stafford is one of the guys that are featured on both trade centers, right? Like, there's chatter that team has wanted him. So at this point, you let go of him for nothing, for as whatever you can get. I think my problem with Chevy is he should have maybe pulled a trigger on a possible deal yesterday. Because the market went south on Stafford today big time, right?
Well, what
yeah.
do you think
he...
What do you think the best is that... Like, what do you think the best he could have really gotten
for
Stafford?
Well, maybe he could have got a fourth for him, but when Iggy gets given away for a fourth round pick, like, where is Stafford going to go? Like, really, what are you going to get for him after that point? Before they unload Iginla, there's a chance that, you know what, they could get maybe a fifth or a fourth for him. Who knows? But you know, at Chevy holding on, thinking that his market's going to go up was he doesn't know how to do it. I don't, he doesn't know how to manage these assets. Like, I don't know.
So just to give the full details as well, the pick is a conditional sixth round pick. The way it works is the sixth round pick could become a fourth round pick if Stafford plays in at least 50% of Boston's remaining regular season games, 50% of playoff games should the Bruins make the playoffs, and if the Bruins win round in round one.
But he's going to be healthy scratched probably.
They got rid of the salary too. They didn't end up
return any.
By the way, the site I'm reading this off of is Yahoo's hockey site, and they rated this trade one Milbury. So there you go.
Is a Milbury a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it says if Stafford manages to stay healthy and return to some semblance of his former self, he could be a great asset to the Bruins, who essentially gave up a bag of pucks to get him. But let's be real here. The conditions surrounding Winnipeg improving that pick to a fourth rounder weigh heavily on the expectations that the Bruins will make the playoffs and succeed in them. This, just to credit who wrote this, this is Jen Neal over at, Yahoo, or Puck Daddy. So essentially the idea here is that the conditions that need to be met to make this a fourth rounder, those are, you know, kind of unlikely. So we'll see, but it could happen. So I guess we got to cheer for the Bruins to win a round. I mean, a fourth round pick is not that bad, right?
If it were to turn into that, that's a pretty decent return, I would say, for Stafford.
I mean,
but you're hedging a bet, or not even. I mean, it's just, it's really luck at that point.
Well, we got something.
That's right. I think back to the first question, though, was about you were saying how is this what you were expecting, or did they overshoot or undershoot? I think that the sad reality is this is exactly what was expected, and that's exactly what happened. It seems like that you're not going to get upset anymore by things just being like, you know what to expect, and you are expecting really nothing. And that's terrible.
Yeah. You go into the deadline knowing that unless it's something that he glaringly has to do, Chevy's not going to do shit. Unfortunately, like Ladd, you got to get rid of Andrew Ladd. And if he doesn't, then it's a huge failure, right? It's something that he has to do. Other than a situation where he absolutely needs to get rid of something or else get nothing for something that, like, Stafford is lowest on the low end of getting any value for him. But if he doesn't get rid of Stafford, then it's a failure for Chevy to do. It's not like he's going to do anything that's really gonna, you know, set the world on fire. He never will, ever.
And that's the sad part, is that as a fan, you're getting to the point where that's your expectation, is that you're just going to do the absolute minimum. That should never be the case in any scenario where you're cheering for a sports team. You shouldn't be content with your team just doing the bare minimum. And that's where we're at, where it's like, oh, that's all that's going to happen. We can script it. We know what the trade's going to be, but you know, the day before, like that's the sad part of where we are.
And so to me, what does that say about our GM as a GM? What does he really do? What is he doing better than any other GM in the league? Like what? Trading, drafting the obvious best player available? Like I'd argue that last year he failed at the draft, because other than if we didn't have Patrick Laine as a second pick, I think he failed.
Well, and let's be clear about all of the draft picks. Other than Scheifele and Trouba, those were all pretty obvious, no? Like, you can say, oh, well, he did a great job with this guy and that guy, but those were the guys, like you're saying, you're supposed to take. Trouba and Scheifele are both kind of exceptions where maybe it went under the radar.
Trouba was in the range, right? Within three.
In the range, sure. Yeah. Sure.
Right? Scheifele was maybe the only Houdini that's really worked out, right?
Morrissey too.
I think Morrissey was projected 20th.
Yeah.
Okay, so how could we have done better with Morrissey if we draft somebody that is in that spot in between where we took him and where he was? You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, some notable players after Morrissey.
That's kind of what I'm saying on that. I'm saying you're taking two guys and he's getting. Right, there's two guys and you're getting all this praise for stealing one guy in Scheifele, really. And to me, anybody can make most of those picks. It's the second to fifth round guys. And we have basically nothing to show for that, do we? Like, yeah, we have guys that we've grown, a couple of them that are playing, but they're super replaceable. And so how, what is that to be proud of in your draft and develop strategy?
Well, and then you look at it, like, what is he really doing to add value to his position? Like, let's look at all facets of the Jets game. Well, you know what? They're really good at assessing forward depth, right? But clearly, he hasn't addressed the defensive depth. And clearly, obviously, with what's happening on the goaltending side, there's something lacking on that side as well. So whether it's bringing in the right talent or even the right coaches to implement systems or to make most of the talent that you have, what is Chevy doing to ensure the success of this team? I don't think he adds any value.
I have a question.
As a general matter, yeah.
So after today, when the trade deadline was done today, and again, I didn't expect him to do anything, but it kind of hit me after everything was all said and done today. So now we really just have to look ahead to next year, right? And it's like, well, what is there that's really going to be new next year that we have to look forward to at this point?
Losing one player?
Right now, in terms of prospects, what do we have? We have Connor, Ross, Levick, maybe Poolman, maybe Logan Stanley, right? And I mean, Poolman may not sign. Who knows what Logan Stanley is going to be? Ross, Levick, and Connor are doing well with the Moose and the AHL. I don't think that guarantees anything. Like, people really get ahead of themselves with that stuff, but obviously it may not be bad either. But there's nothing there that's right now, I think, terribly sexy that's happening. Obviously, I don't think that Poolman or Stanley address your problems on defense. You've got question marks in net that you have to address. And it's like, well, what's he going to do to address this? Is he just going to draft with his picks that he has? And he only got, what, an additional sixth round pick, maybe a fourth? Well, that's it?
Well, what do you think? Is he really going to do anything to improve this team other than drafting?
You know, and then we're going to end up, you know, we're going to end up probably somewhere in the, what, 7 to 12 range in terms of where we pick. So in a draft that's not really being touted as a real high-end sort of draft like the last couple of years, you'll still get a decent pick, but not a top-end pick. And that's kind of it.
And if you're talking about losing potentially Myers, we're not going to speculate too much on what's wrong with him, potentially him for a long period of time. You've got a declining Enstrom. As much as I love the guy, you can see there's some drop off. The only way you're making any moves on defense to improve is to trade some forward depth, where we're pretty fringe on that right now. Plus, you're going to probably lose a guy to Vegas. So all of a sudden, you're going to lose two or three forwards to fill one defensive need. And all of a sudden, this prospect pool or depth that we have is drying up pretty quick, unless you're going to trade a really good player to get what you need.
Well, okay, here's the thing, right? Who should they be trading if they're going to trade anybody?
Well, you're going to have to trade someone pretty damn good if you want to get a top defenseman.
This is where they need to piss or get off the pot, though, right? Like, we have expiring veterans that are over the age of 30. Then there's a big void as far as, you know, what some guys on Twitter would say would be the prime players, right? Between the ages of 24 to 28, right? And then we have the young guys. So, to me, it's time to really decide if we're going to be a middling team for another God knows how many years, right? And just let these guys expire and get you know, the least amount of value for these veterans that could be worth something, you know, to a competing team or somebody who's near their ultimate goal of winning the Stanley Cup, right? So an aging team with an aging core that can compete now, right? What would a Blake Wheeler, you know, be worth to a team like that? What would a Brian Little be worth to a team like that? So now, if the Jets were really wanting to get to there, right, a team that's ready to compete now and that has younger prospects, or a team like an Anaheim who's got depth, young depth at defense, right, what would they do for these types of players? Or are there other teams out there, right? It's time to really build around the new core and the younger core, the Scheifele, Trouba, Ehlers, Laine core, and try to have a long run with a younger core and compete for the long run. Like, but they're not going to do that because they've never done that. They've never had a chance to actually be proactive and do that. The only hockey trade that Chevy ever did or ever pulled off was because of a need, because something that boiled over and a tracksuit got thrown in the shower.
He didn't make that trade. Blake Wheeler and Bufflin made that trade.
Yeah, Bufflin.
Let's also get that straight.
So when we're looking,
can I?
Oh yeah, go.
Sorry, Alan. I know this is a hockey show, but I look at the Yankees barely back in the day, and I know it's a bad analogy because it's the Yankees. But what people forget about when the Yankees kept winning, they had their younger players, and then they spent the money on the veterans, as we all know, the Raul Mondesis and these guys. I'm not a big baseball guy, but they used to, with like 2 years left in those guys' contracts, they would ship them off to other teams that thought they were contending and bring back three or four young prospects time. And they trade three or four of those guys and bring in 10 or 12 guys every year for those guys that were just at the end of their career. And that's how they reloaded all the time. And people forgot that. They thought they bought everything, but they also traded at the perfect time their veterans.
No, and they actually, their development and who they drafted and their scouting departments, like, they've always had good homegrown talent to build.
And so to go to your point, we maybe have that. But you're not doing anything with that unless you're prepared to trade a Wheeler or a Bufflin or a Little before it's too late to recoup four or five prospects and picks. And if we're rebuilding again, you got to maybe do it.
And you know, 3 or 4 years ago, you could sit there and go, you know what? I know these guys haven't won anything yet, but we need them. We don't have the depth up front and need these guys. But these days, You know, you're going to see a drop off in the short term, but that's kind of the point. And you don't, you know, these guys aren't going to be the ones that are carrying your team anymore. They're great assets today still, but they're declining assets. And you know, people are going to look when I talk about what's there to be excited about. I'm sure some of the rah-rah Jets people out there are going to be like, well, look, you know, Laine could still take a step forward. Scheifele could still take a step forward. Ehlers could still take a step forward. Morrissey and Trouba could take steps forward. I agree. And, you know, at least, you know, I don't think any of those guys, maybe Scheifele's peaked out, but he'll stay at that level for a while. But the problem is that for every Scheifele, you have a Little taking a small step back. For a Laine, you have a Wheeler taking a small step back. Trouba takes a step forward and a Bufflin or Enstrom take a step back. Like, you have declining assets on the other end, and you know, you can see it. They're not, you know, maybe one of them has a magical season that they can pull out of their hat, but you know, you think most of these guys have probably peaked out, right?
Right.
Yep.
So yeah, you've got,
so they're going to sign. So on July 3rd or whatever, they're going to sign Brian Little to a 4-year contract. Is that like that? There's no, you know, that's going to happen. You need veterans on your team, and Brian Little, we all will agree, is the most underrated player in the NHL.
Absolutely.
But, yep. But is that honestly what's going to help us live up to the magazine cover? I don't think so. I don't think so.
So, and Little expires next year, right?
Yeah. So they can renegotiate starting this year, right? After the first or whatever.
And I think the you know, the question that is being asked is wrong. It's like, we're looking at it and saying, what do we need to go out there and compete every night? And we're not asking, like, what do we need to do to try to win a Stanley Cup? And I know that, that should be the goal. Like, what do we need to do to actually make this a true Stanley Cup winning team, in the not so distant future, or a Stanley Cup contending team? Like, not obviously, you know, you can't just win a Stanley Cup, but you can make a run in the playoffs, and you don't have the guys to do it right now.
Sure, but if they decided to go a certain way, then at least we have an idea of what's happening, right? If they decided to build and get younger and stockpile assets, you know what? At least we know that they're building for a long run in the future, right? If they pulled off what Toronto did and got rid of Faneuf, Kessel, all these aging guys that would be of no use for a rebuild, right? And got younger, and got more high draft picks, and had a couple, one or two more years of not so great performances, but having good young assets coming up, then you could justify that, right? You can't justify what they're doing right now. And there is no solid goal.
And on the Kessel front, I mean, you know, everyone agrees. Kessel has had a great continuance of his career in Pittsburgh. He's doing fantastic. But I can tell you, I'm in Toronto. No one here in Toronto sits around and goes, damn it, I wish that we had held on to Kessel. And, you know, there's all the jokes about, you know, his issues with the media here and being lazy and blah, blah, blah. I think Kessel was a relatively popular player in Toronto, or at least like relatively well liked, but people were just like, this isn't working. We need to move on.
Well, and so what is that saying about this team that has the same 5-6 guys, whatever the number is, that have been here for 6 years now? When the Jets first moved back, I can remember having plenty of conversations with people about when they're saying, oh, you know, there's no talent here. When the Jets came here, they had between 5 or 8 either almost all-star caliber players or high prospects. Kane, Bogosian, right, would be high prospects at that time, whatnot. They could have easily finished the same place as they did the first 3 years they were here and got rid of all of them and think about how stocked we'd be now. They kept talking about, we got to reload, the cupboards are bare. Then why the heck didn't you trade Andrew Ladd and Brian Little guys 4 years ago? They would have, the team would have sucked, but they sucked anyway.
We've been saying that forever. We've been saying this on this podcast from I think at least episode one. Like they could have blown it up year one because nobody knew who the fuck these guys were other than Evander Kane. Really, did we really know? And other than Evander Kane, Andrew Ladd, and Dustin Byfuglien, did anybody in Winnipeg really know who was on this fucking team? No.
No. So you're complaining. They're all complaining, even the Jets, about what we got, but you kept all of them and you still have all of them, basically.
And what was the quote though, that they were going to build a different culture here? A winning culture? Yeah. Yeah. That's what they did by being, the Atlanta Thrashers 2.0, right? Like, we're the Winnipeg Thrashers. We've been the Winnipeg Thrashers forever. And now that we've got guys that are the real Winnipeg Jets, right? Our identity, our first, second, third draft picks, first round draft picks are on this roster now. Now this is the new identity. Now let's get there. But the problem is being a draft and develop team and holding on to UFAs and letting them expire and not signing the right RFAs when you have control, it doesn't scream that you're really committing to that. Holding on to these guys and re-signing guys, like extending or offering Drew Stafford a 2-year contract, it's totally opposite of what your philosophy has been, right? Or bridging a Michael Frolik, his last RFA deal, signing him to a 1-year bridge contract to his UFA status is you have an RFA, not only an RFA, but a top 6 forward that you have control of, and you can't get a deal done on an asset that you have control of. it's totally, oh man, it's totally the opposite of what they should be doing.
So,
well,
it's totally counterintuitive to me.
My biggest problem with the whole draft and develop thing is that everybody forgets the parting of the drafting and developing is trading. And you've developed assets. You're not necessarily only developing talent. You're developing assets and prospects, and you're developing a core of a franchise. You have to strike. My biggest problem is you're letting these guys play for, not my biggest problem, one of my problems is you're letting these guys play for the Moose, this terrible team, and all of a sudden these prospects that maybe could have drawn something for you a year ago, are their values declining?
Diminishing
a year ago, you might have got something for Scott Kosmachuk or Brendan Lemieux or something. These guys now, so that's why that's a whole different discussion. I think prospects are for the most part worthless, but NHL general managers don't. So what are you doing?
Well, but put it this way. You look at your team and you ask yourself, what do you need to be competitive and make a playoff run? So what do the Jets need right now? How close are they? Well, obviously they're thin on defense, and they don't have the goaltending.
They're well, and you're wishing – they're continuing to wish for Tyler Myers to be healthy. That's all everybody talks about. If he were. He's not. Why didn't you do something about it?
If Tyler Myers is healthy, does that make us a playoff team? Fuck no.
Well, but we talked about that, Roddy, you and I. If they have Myers for the whole season, add one more defenseman, and then, of course, the caveat, they have a different head coach.
Yeah, but that's
a whole different conversation. But I believe talent-wise, with a Myers or a replacement, even with maybe Postma, they're as good as any team in the Western Conference talent-wise. That's what I think. I think it's other things. I think it's system, and I think it's a little bit of depth here and there.
There's no direction, right? But there is no winning attitude. This is a losing culture. These guys, all they've done is lost.
It's just it's more like it's a happy to be here culture, right? Chevy runs maintenance on the team. You know, he whatever assets he's given, you know, a player that existed when the team got here or draft picks that he's assigned, because every team gets draft picks, he uses them. He kind of maintains. He fills the hole, kind of, and the team isn't any better. Team isn't much worse. It's kind of where it was. I did the math. If we finish the season at fake 500, then we're going to have, an average of 86 points over the last 6 years. Thrashers, the 6 years before they came here, averaged 84. It's the same thing. It's the exact same thing.
Wow.
But again,
that is so sad. So
where does that attitude that's okay come from? Now, is that this is a different discussion, but has the team put that attitude on the fans that's acceptable, or are the fans just okay? In the Winnipeg, we always talk about we just want a hardworking, blah, blah, blah. Never do I remember fans calling in radio stations and saying, all I care about is winning. Never hear that. Isn't that what we're here for? Is Chevy doing this because that's what the fans want, or are the fans accepting of it because that's just what the team's doing and that's all right?
Here's the sad truth, right? Us, the guys that are critical, that want to win, we're probably about 25% of the fan base. Even if that number is that high, in large part, this fan base is happy that they're here. In large part, this fan base is happy that the Jets are back and are happy that hockey is back and we have an NHL team. And I think for a large part, most of the Jets fan base is okay with that.
At the Winter Classic, they were like, here are the top moments in this, you know, in the short history of the Jets franchise. And the number one moment was the announcement of the franchise. It's like, when you look at the Philadelphia Flyers, for example, they don't go, the number one moment is when we said, hey, we're going to have a team in Philadelphia. It's when they won fucking Stanley Cups. Like, that's really telling that the number one, and I mean, you know, it's been 5 years, and that's the top thing that we've experienced, right? The number two thing is we had two games where everybody put on white outfits and cheered really loudly. And what we ignore is that the team lost those games.
Absolutely. In devastating fashion, the first one.
But again,
this is also the same city that their number one hockey moment is losing a playoff series when you had a rookie score 76 goals. Your number one all-time moment is Dave Ellett scoring a goal that meant nothing.
Because we lost
so,
after losing the series 3-1, yeah.
So, what are we doing here? I can't comprehend it. I just don't understand.
It's where the bar is set, right? Like, another thing that I think is a problem in terms of fans and media is, you know, absolutely, you can't run until you walk. So we're not going to sit here and say this team should be winning the Stanley Cup next year. But do you ever hear anybody when they talk about where they want this team to be headed to be a Stanley Cup team? No, it's always, well, could make playoffs. It's like playoffs just means that you're not in the bottom half of the league. You're still not a contender. And we're not
half.
And we're not even there. Like, we've set the bar at the halfway point of the league as what we deem to be successful, and the team hasn't made that. And that's a problem too.
But it's not a problem for everybody. That's so sad. You said it so great. Your goal is to be as good as half the teams, and you can't even do that. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And people are okay with it. Like you're saying, Roddy, how are people happy to have a team back? What kind of money do these people have to be dropping $140 a game, happy to have their team back? Like, that's where I don't compute it at all. I'm not a season ticket holder, but
if ownership is confident that they're going to sell out and have the stands full, right? And, you know, not to mention have all these, I don't know, revenue coming in from lotteries. I mean, they are not in any crunch to be competitive at all. Like,
I agree.
Why would True North really want to compete now? They don't have any outside pressures to do that. Our fan base isn't demanding it. You know, they're set up to succeed for years to come. Like, you know what? There's a litmus test right now. It's year six. The upper bowl seats are up for renewal this year, right? You know what? There's still a waiting list for season tickets. They're still going to have those seats renewed. They're going to have those season tickets bought up. Where is the pressure for these guys to succeed? There is none. There is absolutely no pressure for them to succeed.
I think they're going to be in for a rude awakening when it comes to renewals the next time, because there's no way people our age with you know, normal incomes are either renewing again or going to sign up fresh when
they're
everybody
still
I know
I think maybe
is giving away tickets.
Maybe after year 12. Because this is year six. And those upper bowl seats are going to get renewed. Whether it's the guys that hold them right now, there are other groups of guys wanting to renew or soak up those season tickets. There are. So that takes us to year 9. Because let's face it, those lower bowl seats are always going to be renewed. Because those are all the corporate seats and everything else. You know what? Until that support starts waning, there isn't going to be any pressure for this team to succeed. Not to mention that the fact that they're set up to succeed anyways. Like, nobody really talks about, you know, the lottery's money that they're promised and every other advantage that True North has having the Jets here, right? You know what? Everybody's anointed Mark Shipman the savior, right? But let's not kid ourselves. This guy's not losing any money. He's making money.
Yeah, he's not a philanthropist. He's making money off this fucking team.
He's making money.
He's making tons of money and land deals and hotels and casinos. Like,
you know what?
And you know,
look at True North Square. Like, you think that's for the betterment of the downtown?
And you know what? Hey, you know what? Good for him. Like, good for him in terms of making money and running the business. I'm good for him in terms of doing it And these are, you know, they're, True North Square is going to be nicer than that fucking parking lot that's there. So good for Absolutely. That as well. But it's not, his number one goal isn't to make Winnipeg better. If he wasn't making money off of this, he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, I went to a game a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Tampa Hockey Night in Canada. It was terrible, terrible. It was the first time in my life. I'm 39 years old. I've been going to hockey games since I was 6, 7, 8 years old. It was the first time in my life I felt like I was at Disney World. It was like, oh, I'm just going to sit here and watch what they tell me to watch. I'm not going to cheer because there's nothing to cheer about. Not that I wouldn't. And as soon as that little horn goes, I'm going to stand up and walk into a crowded concourse and stand in a line and spend it by a $10 popcorn for my daughter and wait and wait and wait because they're telling me to wait. And then as soon as I hear the warning, you know what I mean? It was the first time in my life that I felt like I wasn't out to have fun at a sporting event, that I was there because that's what we were supposed to do. Nobody was having fun. Nobody was enjoying themselves. Nobody was cheering.
That was a bad
and
game.
I felt odd. I mean, of course, and it doesn't happen every night. It wouldn't have felt that way last night, right? But it just felt so corporate and so orchestrated and so distant. And I've never, ever felt like that in all my years. And I thought, like, this is what happens when your on-ice product sucks.
Well, that's you know, I remember, I think it was getting into about season 3, and I went to a game against Nashville. And the Jets lost. It wasn't like they didn't get blown out, but it was a bad loss. It was uninspired on their part. And it was the first time that you could kind of get that sense that people sitting in that arena at the end of the game were like, what did I just pay X number of dollars for? Because when you go to any kind of event and it's really good and you get great value and are entertained, you pretty quickly, you forget about what you spent on it. But when it's not good, what's the first thing that you think of? Like, I just spent $100 on this? Why?
And it doesn't that come back to the actual on-ice product and the questioning for me why we're insisting for half of a game to try and play a defensive game when we can't play defense, and then all of a sudden when the game gets out of hand, we're really good because we're a goal-scoring machine. So why aren't we playing that way? And to tie it back to it, to just what's going on with the... Why are you trying to do something you can't do? That's bad coaching. That's bad everything. Why are you trying to play
a defensive game
and then you're losing 4-1 and all of a sudden you're the best team on earth? It's because your style changes to what suits your team. You have Peyton Manning on your team. You don't go run first. You've passed the ball.
But there's no identity. There is no identity.
I agree 100%. And whatever identity it is, it doesn't suit the personnel or the personnel doesn't suit the identity, whatever. It doesn't work. Why are you continuing to do it? You have the worst special teams. You try the same thing. You have the worst defense. You still run this man-to-man garbage. Why? How could you go into work every day thinking this is going to work? It hasn't been working. Try something else. I don't get it.
It isn't going to work. Our coach is barely a fake 500 coach. He's barely a
in 19 years.
Well, hey, by the way, the team's been around for 18 years if you count Atlanta, and they don't have a playoff win. So,
I gotta say this again. How many organizations that have not made the playoffs in 5 of 6 years have as much continuity as the Winnipeg Jets? There, nothing has changed.
Well, some of them keep losing, but they you know, there are chronic loser teams out there, but they tend to lose with different people in charge. Like, they don't have the same team fucking it up. They might have two or three.
That's what I'm saying.
You know?
There isn't as much continuity as there has been on the Jets as far as coaching or management. One person's been fired. Well, two people if you include McCambridge, right? Top to bottom. Noel got fired, and that was it. They promoted Vincent and fired McCambridge, and that's it. That is it, man.
Listen, I'm a mailman. I do the same route every day. I do it the same way. If every day it's taking me too long, probably after, like, what, the third day, I might try and do it in a different order, right? I'm not going to keep doing it the same way for 6 years, the hard way. It just doesn't make any sense why you wouldn't try something different, whether it's management. Like somebody said yesterday, even with the Wade Flaherty thing, well, maybe, you know, it's possible that it's not the goalie coach. It's a goalie coach. Fire him and get a new one. Try it.
Try something like, different.
There's a possibility that it is the goalies just suck. But I'm going to fire the $200,000 a year goalie coach before I'm going to waste another $20 million on Andre Pavlik. Like, why would you continue to run out your shitty used car salesman every day if he's not selling any cars? Mark Chipman.
All right, we got to do Assets. We're 50 minutes in.
One more thing.
Yeah.
You talked about the used car thing and everything else, right? Ask Mark Chipman in his other businesses if a salesperson isn't producing, if they're going to keep him on. Hell no.
And if you're going to bring in somebody to train that salesperson, is the salesperson still going to keep their job and the trainer going to keep their job? That's my question.
Yeah, but the problem
and
is that... In this scenario, people are still buying the cars. Like, your salesperson sucks, but people are still buying the cars, right? Like,
there you go.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Hang on.
So why care? You're rolling in the dough. I actually want to do the first Ask the Superfans question for you guys. So this is from @Slip with 5 eyes, the most hated Jets fan on Twitter. My question, using hashtag Ask the Superfans @AIHSuperfans on Twitter is, at one point in time, I was actually confident in proclaiming that the Jets got the better of the Evander Kane trade.
Oh, no.
Whoa.
After the last year, looking at Stafford, who's gone for a sixth, Myers, who knows what's happening with him, if he's going to play again, two guys in the minor leagues, and Armia, who has 13 points this season. Do we reassess?
Okay, here's my take, okay? Let's look at who's playing in the NHL right now. it's just Kane versus Armia, right?
Well, Stafford's playing in the NHL.
Is he?
Okay.
Sometimes.
Okay, let's add both those players' production this year then together. Armia and Stafford. Hands down, who's the winner? Just based on production this year.
Okay, my take on that is, the only way you can say that Buffalo even come, or the Jets come close to winning that trade, is if you take the attitude that the Jets win because Kane isn't in the dressing room anymore. If you're going straight talent, straight what's happening on the ice, there's no contest. The Buffalo wins that. Kane's the best player, and we have almost nothing to show for it other than a prospect. And like I said earlier, prospects to me don't really
they're not worth anything right now. Brendan Lemieux, doesn't matter, Brendan Lemieux, Roslovic, whatever it
that's
is,
right.
You traded away two players in your prime, in their prime, right? A right-handed defenseman that's in his prime, and Evander Kane, former 30 goal scorer in his prime, for Tyler Myers, who is in his prime but now is injured, and Drew Stafford, and a bunch of maybes.
Even if Myers is playing, it's still not. I don't know.
You know what's funny is when the trade was made, I remember all the people on the side of the Chevy side were like, "Hey guys, wait a couple of years. We're not going to be able to actually say who won for a couple of years." And it's like, I think it actually got worse for them in a couple of years.
Yep.
Oh yeah. The only justification is that the Jets are better because they don't have Kane around the hockey club.
Except that they have a subtraction. If they've been winning, then I'd agree with you.
Sure. I agree too. I'm just saying that's the only way you can say the Jets are even in the contest of who won the trade.
Before the tracksuit incident, though, the Jets had been over the playoff line for longer than they'd ever been before.
Yes, that's correct.
They had the best. They were having the best season they'd ever had at that point.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
So where was the real problem? Like, I'm being honest here. Where was they're winning hockey games?
And who almost every single night was the best player on the ice, scoring or not?
He was always
Andre Pavlik.
That's right. Those nine games are incredible.
But honestly, for a guy that was a cancer in the locker room, he was always the number one forward for time on ice. Right?
Yeah.
Without any power play time. He didn't get any power play time. He played the toughest minutes out of anybody in that top six. But yet he was a cancer to the team?
Because guys don't respect what you do on the ice, right?
Yeah, it's all about everything else, right?
Right.
Is it all about everything else? Is it because he wore a tracksuit? Like, I don't know.
Come on.
A lot of nights he was the only player that was even trying.
You know what?
While hurt.
100%. 100%.
The problem was his attitude belongs in basketball.
We can all admit he's a douchebag.
He is a douchebag.
So. Oh, yeah. Big time.
Tell me any team that doesn't have at least a handful of douchebags on
the
team.
This team on this show has at least three.
We're all
who are you excluding? Because you should probably include them.
Yeah. In the grand scheme of things, come on. Are hockey players the most philanthropic people on the face of this earth? Are they the biggest sweethearts on the face of this earth?
Well, PK Subban is, and then he got traded.
Right, so go both ways. That's the worst part. You can be this captivating, giving, energetic guy, and people still don't like you. And then you could be, what's the captain there, Pacioretty? Is that the one?
Yeah.
That guy's the most stiff, boring POS. And he, you know, he's the one that got rid of Subban? Come on. Anyway, that's a whole different discussion.
My problem with this whole good old boy hockey thing is you could say the right things in front of the camera or whatever it is in public, but inside, we all know you're a prick. You understand what I'm saying? As long as you say the right thing and play the right game with your teammates and shit like that. But you could be a selfish fucker on the ice, but who cares, right?
Well,
I don't know.
No, it's totally true. I talked to an NHL player a few times, current NHL player, who played on a team with two of the biggest personalities in the league. And the one guy that the whole league says is the asshole isn't the asshole. It's the other one that everybody thinks is the great guy. And so we don't know what's going on.
No. Like, come on.
You know what I mean?
I have to say that was a fantastic Ask the Superfans question to that person. Should get a prize. Look at all this discussion.
No kidding.
Aaron at Aaron for Shoe asks, would you expose Buff in the expansion draft?
Ew. God, no.
No, what would we be without Buff?
I say no only because you're so thin on defense, you don't really have a choice. I mean, I think I still think he's really good. He might be in a small decline, but also, what can you do? You can't lose him for nothing.
Well, you could never lose him for nothing. You could say, could you trade him? Then that's a whole different conversation. But no, not
trade him before the expansion draft, maybe.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you know Myers is coming back, it's a thought. But
and at this point, you know, right now as things stand, the Jets pretty much have to save four defensemen on their list, right? You can't let a defenseman go for nothing right now, except for Stewart.
No, Myers doesn't get taken.
He could be.
I don't think so. I don't think he ever plays again. I think it's a safe bet that you could leave him exposed.
Is it that bad?
Obviously, I don't know anything. I'm 1,000 miles away, but
I mean, it's fishy, right? Like, you know, he gets surgery. He plays a dozen games. They don't talk whatsoever. There's no sniff of information out there about what's wrong with him. And 3 months later, they're like, dude's having surgery. He's out for 2 more months. And it's
did you guys really notice any drop off in his play though?
No, but if he's hurt. Like if he can't.
No, but did he look like he was playing hurt, guys?
It was a dozen games.
When he came back, he did look like he was still. He came back too soon.
I think you have to put something down where you get an answer on his physical condition before the expansion draft, and you have to find, like Brian's saying, if you can leave him exposed knowing that he might be better in 6 months, Las Vegas probably isn't going to touch him. But you need to know, because that's, I mean, let's be realistic. It shouldn't make a huge difference who, if it's a forward, who it is. It shouldn't affect the whole, oh my gosh, we're never going to compete because we lost Joel Armia, whatever it is. But that does make a huge difference, and they need to find out how serious. They need to get an answer. Are you coming back? And
what if they knew he wasn't 100%, that he could have probably come back, but they shelved him knowing that this season was probably a lost cause, and why not give him the whole year to recuperate?
Maybe.
That's smart.
Right?
That's a smart move.
Not only that, having the unknown about him, you could leave him unprotected and have Las Vegas not want to touch him and waste a pick.
Are they that smart, though?
I don't know.
I was just going to say.
I don't know.
Chevy's
find out that Chevy's really been duping us all, and he's this mad scientist genius.
Well, look at Benning. Look at Benning these last couple days.
That's right. And I also think we could agree that Chevy's become a cheap Manitoban, and so if anything, he would be cheap and try and hide something like that so that he could save this great contract that he has. That would be very typical Winnipeg.
You know what? And maybe this offseason he pulls the trigger on three blockbuster deals for his three aging veteran core guys and gets a whole bunch of young stud
Jesus.
Players.
I'm going to our next questions because you're going crazy.
And he played the longest rope-a-dope scam on all of this fan base for 6 years, maybe.
These next two questions are very similar, so I'll ask them both. Fat Tony Bones asks, if you had to keep a Chevy, what is the one off-season move he has to get done? And trade deadline Adam at Sir Sexy Rex, he asks, what is one big trade you'd like to see the team make, regardless of if the other team is into it?
I think that's simple. I think Connor, Aroslavik, one of those type of guys for one of Anaheim's extra unprotectable D-men. That's just, I don't know enough about the Anaheim guys. I know they got 8 guys and can only protect 4, and I know some of them fit into our needs, and I think you trade one of our young guys that are replaceable and bring in one of those D-men.
You know what, and they're pretty deep with guys with defensive depth in the minors too, young guys mm-hmm. too, right?
Exactly.
Prospects.
Yeah.
I think yeah, that they're... other than what Scheifele, Liney, Trouba, if he's going to stick around, who knows? Morrissey, I'd say other than those. Oh, and Ehlers, I'd say other than those 5 guys, everybody on the Jets is on the table, and whatever it takes to get the right defenseman, do it.
Yeah.
I think possibly you could have a big haul and get multiple players if you traded a combination of one of the veterans with one of the younger guys. Somebody who needs forward help and is deep on the on defense, right?
But, Carolina.
Yeah, Carolina was what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Mr. Civ at Super Jets fan stealing our That's kind of a infringement
copyright
on our name.
Infringement, yes.
Why does Chevy answer a yes, no question with a 5-minute diatribe that actually never answers the question?
Well, it's a process. You got to...
Yeah, it sure
Brian with a bazinga.
Yeah.
after nearly an hour of silence. Attaboy.
I like this one. Here's one. Along the same lines, Hanger Hockey at Hanger Hockey. Which has the better roundabouts, Chevy or the River Heights neighborhood?
Chevy by a mile. Winnipeg doesn't even know how to build a roundabout. Chevy built a whole career on them. Come on.
That's
easy.
O Jets O. This is actually a pretty interesting one. What keeps you supporting the Winnipeg Jets organization?
I'm attached to the players now. I'm in too deep.
They're my team. They're my team. They're the Winnipeg Jets. I'll always support them. You know what? I'll complain as hell about them, but I'll always support them. They're my team.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so I was a Jets fan forever. I'm one of the few people that stuck with the Jets when they moved to Phoenix. I was a Coyotes fan the whole time. And the first 2 years the Jets were back, I even was a 50-50 fan. Because for me, it of course, the city pride is huge, but it's the names on the back of the jerseys. That's why I get so angry with people. Like, the second somebody screws up, trade them. Oh, that guy sucks. This guy's never going to be this. These are your guys. You go to war with them. I could never understand how you could cheer for Tkachuk and Numanen and all the old guys that left in April, and in September you hated them. You hated their guts. I understand the politics behind it, don't get me wrong, but I couldn't get over the fact that I put all these years into these guys. Now that I'm, like Brian said, I'm getting to know the players, and I'm getting to, to me, that's what it's about. The Winnipeg part is huge, but to me, it's about the investment you put in with the team. You're part of the team, aren't we? Yeah. I mean, we're supposed to be. We're supposed to feel like it, at least.
And for me, it's like, I like to crack wise on Winnipeg, for sure. And I've moved away 3 times, but I'm born and raised in Winnipeg. I talk about Winnipeg all the time, to the point where people are sick about hearing it. And really, they should be. And, you know, I remember, and there's pride in having a team, even if it's bad. I'm there too. I remember when I lived in Ottawa before the Jets came back, and I went to Senators games, and I was like, it would be awesome if I could go to a Senators game and, like, my team, the Winnipeg team, would come into town and I could cheer
for. You did that.
Because all these other teams that I cheered for, I never felt like they were truly my team. My team is the Winnipeg Jets. And the other thing is, like, people might ask the question, why do you follow the team if they infuriate you and you bitch and moan about it? And it's like, I do it because I want them to win. I want my team to be a good team. I'd like in my lifetime to have my hometown team be a championship team. That would be really fucking cool. And, you know, I know that there's a long time left, potentially, but years are passing, and we haven't had anything truly exciting, except, again, for the stuff we talked about earlier. When the team came back, 2 playoff losses at a whiteout, a Dave Ellett goal, a Teemu Selänne run. That's not, I'm sorry, like, I get that those are special moments, but that's not a lot in, now I'm 38. I'd like to have something.
I don't understand yet. I think all of us could have a 4-hour podcast about why people think fanning a certain way isn't fanning, being a fan a certain way isn't or is. I can't understand whatever got accomplished by complacency. I just don't understand. And whatever, how, I know we can't change anything. At the same time, as a fan, why you would be okay with losing games, not making the playoffs. It baffles me. And again, we could talk about it for 100 hours. You want to cheer. It doesn't make you a bad fan because you want the Jets to get a new defenseman. it doesn't compute to me.
So that's all we got for Ask the Superfans tonight. So if you want to reach out to us, we will answer your questions and read your takes at using the hashtag Ask the Superfans at our Twitter handle at AIH Superfans is where you can find us. And, I think that's it. We're at 1 hour and 10 minutes. Is there anything else anyone's dying to say, especially you, Chris, because this is your opportunity to speak to, you know, our dozens of listeners, maybe.
Yeah. Are we sure of that? No, first of all, I'd thank you guys, and I'd be glad to come on anytime. And on top of that, I touched on a lot of the points that I feel most passionately about. I don't understand this type of, you're not a real fan if you're complaining. And I don't understand, for me, my biggest complaint about the team is simple that you can go into work every morning thinking that this is okay to just keep doing the same thing over and over. If it were working, that would be a great strategy to keep doing it. If not working, why are you continuing to do the same thing? I don't get it. Don't get it.
So if people want to, you know, tell you why they think that you're a bad fan, what's your Twitter handle again?
It's CMAC Live, and that I hear it almost every day, so if you're interested, you can feel free.
and as for the other super fan pals, again, I'm at Slip with Five Eyes, or Slip.
Hey, I'm a big poppy, and I didn't keep my promise of not trying to swear today. I apologize.
I'm Brian. I think you can find me on Twitter.com at Brian from AIH.
And there you go. So until next week, we will. Go Jets, go, right? Yay! Bye.
Bye.